Welcome back to Four Winds Fellowships. We are in Module 2B of our Bereans Bible Institute. In Module 2, we're talking about the nature of God and His Son, the doctrine which we refer to as apostolic monotheism. It's what was handed down by the apostles to the next generation of Christians and was defended in the Christian churches until other ideas began to invade and encroach on what was taught by the apostles. And one of those, of course, was Trinitarianism, which began in the very late second and early third centuries. Well, in Module 2B, we're talking about wisdom from Proverbs chapter 8. Solomon portrays what appears to be, at first glance, just sort of a literary device, a personification of God's wisdom. But we saw in the previous episodes that interpretation is really precluded by some of the statements that are made in Proverbs 8 about God acquiring wisdom. This person who's speaking says that God acquired me, the beginning of his ways for his works. Says he established me, it says he beget me before he created all these things. And so this person called wisdom in Proverbs 8 is portrayed in terms that go beyond merely a personification of one of God's attributes. We know that God has always possessed wisdom as an abstract quality of his nature. But in this case, this particular entity referred to as wisdom in Proverbs 8 speaks as though God did not possess this person speaking prior to the creation, but that this person was begotten by God at the beginning of creation. Then we saw in Proverbs chapter 30 that Solomon identifies this person called wisdom as God's son in Proverbs 30, 1 through 4. Well, last time we went into the New Testament, before last, we looked at Jesus at his baptism and how God used language when he identified his son from heaven. He identified him using language that comes directly out of Proverbs 8, what wisdom says in Proverbs chapter 8. So that's an important clue there as well. Last time we went into Colossians chapter 1 and we showed the parallels between what Paul says about Christ in Colossians 1 with the very similar statements in Proverbs chapter 8. And there's absolutely no question that Paul was drawing on Proverbs chapter 8, 22 through 31, when he spoke of Christ in Colossians 1, 14 through 20. All right, now, today what I want to do is I want to dig in a little bit more into Colossians 1, but I want to, as we go through this lesson, I want to deal with some of the arguments that are presented by biblical Unitarians who deny Christ's preexistence. They deny that he was an actual being who was God's agent at the time of creation. And so the two primary passages, and there are actually four passages, possibly five, depending on a variant reading in 1 Corinthians, but there are at least four passages in the New Testament that connect Christ with the original creation as being God's agent in creation. But the two strongest ones, of course, are John chapter 1, verses 3 and verse 10, and then this passage in Colossians chapter 1 that we looked at. And those two passages have some things in common. We've actually already looked at John's statements in the previous Module 2A, but we're going to compare some of the statements that John made with some of the statements that Paul made. But in particularly, I want to first examine this clause that we see translated in John 1:3, which says that all things originated through him, and without him not one thing originated, referring to the Word. And then in Colossians 1, it says all things were created through him and for him in Colossians 1 verse 16. And the antecedent there for him is the Son of God in verse 14. All right, so it's important that we look at this clause through him. Through him, that's used both in John 1 and in Colossians 1 with regard to the creation occurring through Christ. What I found is that a lot of biblical Unitarians, they have really three different attempts to get around these passages that are completely different and don't agree with each other. They're mutually exclusive, but they have three different attempts to do that by different people. And I'm going to show at the end of this lesson why those three attempts are completely wrong. They are writing roughshod over the grammar as well as over logic in these passages when they come up with these three different attempts to, let's just say, outrun these passages that place Christ at the time of creation as being God's agent, exactly as we saw in Proverbs chapter 8. Now, the critical clause is here. It says di autou. It's dia. They drop the A whenever you have a Greek word that ends with a vowel and the next word begins with a vowel. The preposition will drop the last letter, but it's still pronounced. Otherwise, you'd have dia autou. It's just pronounced di autou. But it's the same. It's the same term. Okay. So through him in John 1, 3 and 10 and in Colossians 1, 16 is di autou. Now the important thing to remember here is that whenever the preposition dia takes an object in the in the genitive case, then the word means through. That is, the action is being accomplished through an agent, through another person. All right. So that agent or that person has to exist at the time the action is taking place in order for that action to occur through that person. And if dia simply meant with reference to or on account of or because of, in other words, all things were created on account of Christ or because of Christ. If that was the case, then dia would have to take a object in the accusative case. And the accusative case object of autou here is auton. You see that this last letter, it looks like a V. It's actually an N, a nu in Greek. It would have to be auton in order for it to have that meaning of all things were created in reference to Christ or because of Christ, on account of Christ, things of that nature. All right, when it's in the genitive case, as it is here, autou, what looks like a U, it's an upsilon ending on this word, which is really him. That means it's in the genitive case. And in the genitive case, dia, with a genitive case object, always requires an agent. It points to an agent who is the person or entity through which the action is being done or accomplished. All right, so that the point being, again, that person or agent has to exist in order to for the action to be done through that person. Now you may notice here we have di autou here and then we have di ou here. This is the relative pronoun. This is the personal pronoun, which is normally translated him. And this is the relative pronoun, which is usually translated whom, who or whom. Okay. The sense is really the same because it's referring to, it's pointing back to a person that was already stated in the context. The only real difference between him and whom is with sentence structure. That is, when you use whom, you have an ongoing sentence referring back to somebody that's in the same sentence, while when you have autou, him, it's referring back to somebody that's stated previously in the context, but not necessarily in the same sentence. All right, but the meaning is the same. All right, so what I want to do is I want to go through a list of scriptures that have di autou or di ou. in them in reference to Christ, that is through him or through whom, referring to Christ, something is accomplished or done. All right. And by going through this list, I want you to see that in every single case, Christ has to be present and existing in order for that action to be done by God through Christ. All right. He can't just be a figment in the imagination of God or part of God's plan or something of that nature, like Unitarians like to attempt to explain these away. All right. So we already talked about John 1:3. All things were made through him, and without him was not anything made. So obviously this is talking about through the person called the Word. Now, whether that Word is a person or not, we'll get to a little bit later. Okay, so just hold that thought. In John 1:7, it says, this is talking about John the Baptist, came for a witness to bear witness about the light, that all might believe through him. Right? Through Christ, who is the light. In John 1:10, he was in the world, and the world was made through him, yet the world did not know him. This is another passage we're going to talk about a little bit later. For God did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world, but in order that the world might be saved through him. Again, that's the same thing, diao2, is same in all of these. It's either going to be translated through him or through whom, but again, the meaning is always exactly the same. All right. So is the world saved through Christ without Christ actually coming and doing something? Or is the world saved through Christ by Christ's actual and personal intervention and use by God as an agent? Well, obviously the latter is the case, right? Acts 2:22, this one's interesting. It talks about Jesus' miracles. In Peter's sermon in Acts 2, it says, "Men of Israel, hear these words. Jesus of Nazareth, a man attested to you by God with mighty works and wonders and signs that God did through him in your midst, as you yourselves know." Now, obviously, God didn't do miracles through Jesus before Jesus existed, right? Obviously, he had to exist in order for God to do miracles through him. Again, it's exactly the same diao2 that we see in here and here and all these other places. All right, let's look at, by the way, the reason I have these color-coded, the yellow ones have to do with God creating the creation through him, and the turquoise color here has to do with things related to Christ's accomplishing redemption for mankind. And the one in green here, I only had one in green, which is God performing miracles through him. But by those color codes, you can kind of get the sense. All right. Romans chapter 5, verse 1 says, "Therefore, having been justified by faith, we have peace with God through our Lord Jesus Christ, through whom," again, that's the same as this, through whom, it's dia plus the genitive relative pronoun, "through whom also we have obtained our introduction by faith into this grace," and of course it's through Jesus Christ. Obviously he existed. Now verse 9, "much more than having now been justified by his blood, we shall be saved from wrath of God through him." Again, Christ has to have done something in order for this to occur. "And not only this, but we also exalt in God through our Lord Jesus Christ, through whom we have now received the reconciliation." That is through Jesus Christ. Without Christ's active participation in this, our redemption, you couldn't have this "through whom" occurring here. 1 Corinthians 8:6. Now this is one of the favorite verses that biblical Unitarians like to use to prove that there is only one God and that Jesus is not himself God, that is the Father. And they're right about that. He is not that. But it uses, what's funny about this is it uses the very language of John 1 and Colossians 1 to show that Christ was God's agent in creation. Yet they kind of just skip over that part. They use the first part, but they kind of skip over the part that I have highlighted here. Look what it says. "Yet to us is one God, the Father, of whom are all things, and we to him, and one Lord Jesus Christ, through whom, dia autu, are the all things. That is the all things. He's talking about the creation. And we, through him, again, we have dia autu here. That is, we are God's through Christ's work. Ephesians 2:18. For through him, that is through Christ, we both have access in one spirit to the Father. Colossians 1:16. For by him all things were created in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities. All things were created through him, dia autu, and for him. And then if you skip all the way down to verse 20, it says, and through him, that is through Christ, to reconcile to himself all things. That is, God is reconciling all things to or through Jesus Christ, all things to himself, whether on earth or in heaven, making peace by the blood of his cross. What's interesting about this passage, we covered it a little bit last time, but that the exact same language, that all things were created through him, is found here in verse 20, that all things in heaven and earth, which is what was stated about this, are reconciled to God through him. What biblical Unitarians want to do is they want to say, well, no, this is different than this. No, it's not. Both of these require Christ's actual presence to be God's agent when these two things occur, when all things are created and when all things are reconciled to God through the very same person, that is Jesus Christ. All right, now, Hebrews chapter 1, verse 2. But in these last days he has spoken to us by his Son, whom he appointed heir of all things. And again, of course, that agrees with what we saw in Colossians, that all things were created through him and for him, and that's because Hebrews says he's the heir of all things, right? So he is God's heir. Whom he appointed the heir of all things, through whom also he created the world. And that's actually not a really good translation, although it's close. It's literally ages, all right? But either way, it's talking about past ages, not future ages. All right, now Hebrews 7:25, it says, consequently he is able to save to the uttermost those who draw near to God through him, that is through Christ. Christ has to be existing and has to be God's agent through whom God is accomplishing things in order for any of these things to occur. 1 John 4:9, in this the love of God was made manifest among us, that God sent his only Son into the world so that we might live through him, or that is by the accomplishments that the Son of God has done. He did them. He actively carried out God's plan. And it has to be the same in all of these cases, including John 1:3, that all things were made through him, that the world was made through him in John 1:10, in Colossians, that Colossians 1:16, that all things were created through him and for him and so forth. All right, so these statements all have precisely the same meaning. They all require personal presence, agency, God using this person who exists to carry out and to do the work that he has assigned him in order to accomplish God's overall plan of either creation or of the redemption of his creation. All right, now, in our remaining time, I want to look at what I would call three fails of biblical Unitarian explanations trying to do away with these passages that refer to Christ having a part, playing a part, an active part in the creation of all things. All right, so they have their ways of trying to explain these passages away, because clearly if Christ was involved personally in the creation of all things, he had obviously had to exist. One of the primary features of biblical Unitarianism, which separates them from other groups that believe in one God only, that God is the Father, is that they deny that Christ pre-existed. Not only do they deny the Trinitarian kind of pre-existence, which is eternal pre-existence of being co-equal and co-eternal with the Father, that's a Trinitarian form of pre-existence. That's not what we're talking about here. This is a temporal pre-existence. This is pre-existence since day one of creation, not pre-existence going all the way back into eternity. All right, so that's the difference between Trinitarian pre-existence and what we call pre-existence in apostolic monotheism. So I would call these three fails. They're futile attempts that Unitarians use to try to escape the gravity of what is being stated in these passages. They're futile attempts that either ignore or use faulty logic, or they ignore the grammar of the text as it's stated in the Greek. Their explanations are based on one of those two things: either faulty grammar or interpretation of the grammar, or faulty logic, one of the two. All right, so the first fail is those biblical Unitarians who try to claim that through him doesn't really mean he was there, right? So in that group, you'd have people like Anthony Buzzard, Carlos, his son-in-law, and a group of others that try to make John 1:1 refer, logos, the word there, to refer to God's plan, some abstract thing, and that through this plan, God created all things. In Colossians 1 as well, that through him only means in reference to him, or because of him, or on account of him, that all things were created. And I've heard that from different biblical Unitarians, and that's simply wrong. The grammar proves that wrong, and the whole list of verses we just went through proves that wrong as well, all right, by showing the comparisons. Fail number two is regarding Colossians 1 and John 1, is this claim that is being promoted now pretty strongly by a few in the biblical Unitarian movement. Dr. Dustin Smith is one of the ones that is promoting this particular interpretation. But essentially, they say that, yes, okay, so Colossians 1 and wisdom is clearly referring to wisdom in Proverbs chapter 8, and it's using the language from Proverbs 8, so they would agree with all of that. And they would also say that the word, the logos, is that both wisdom and logos are that Jesus is the incarnation of a personification of wisdom in Proverbs and Word. The problem here is that wisdom and Word cannot do things. Okay, wisdom and Word, if these are simply personifications in the Old Testament. So, well, first of all, what is a personification? Personification is a literary device. It's a way of communicating an idea as though it's a person. So wisdom, obviously God has wisdom as an abstract quality of his mind. And so it's sort of like putting that wisdom, that abstract quality, portraying it as though it's an actual person who can speak and is then, you know, talking about how God, you know, used me to create all things and things like that. Look, I am God's wisdom. We already showed why that won't work in Proverbs chapter 8. But the problem in Colossians 1, which is where what they're trying to explain away with that personification mentality, and also a word in John 1, is that especially in Colossians 1, it uses personal pronouns to refer to the Son as being that agent through whom God created all things. When it says in Colossians 1:15, he's the image, he's talking about the Son in the previous verse, he's the image of the invisible God, first produced of all creation. And then it goes on to say, for through him all things were created, things in heaven, things on earth, of the seen and the unseen, etc. All right, so it uses the pronouns him. These are personal pronouns. And it says through him all these things were created, which means whoever him refers to has to be present in order for those things to be created through him. But him cannot refer to a personification. That is, him cannot refer to an imaginary person who is just God's intellect that is being portrayed as though it's a person. Him cannot refer to that. Him is a personal pronoun. It requires a person. And the person is the antecedent in that very passage, which is the Son of God in the previous verse. So grammatically and logically, through him has to mean through Jesus Christ, not through an idea that later became Jesus Christ. Then it would be through a personification, not through the Son of God. But the grammar absolutely requires that the personal pronoun, where it says through him and for him, all things are created through him and for him, in verse 16, has to be a person. All right, it's not possible that it not be a person, grammatically or logically. All right, so that requires personal presence and agency, as we've already shown. In John 1, 3, and 10, we also have personal pronouns, he, him, there. There's this one in John 1, 3, it's where it says, all things originated through him, and without him, not one thing originated. The pronoun him there is also out too. But the thing about it there in John 1 is that it's referring back to what's already stated, which is the Word. Right? In the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God, and the Word was God. All things were made through him. Now, the thing that complicates that passage is that the noun word, logos, is masculine in Greek, even though it doesn't necessarily mean a male person. All right? There's lots of nouns in Greek that are not either referring to a male or a female, that are things, but they are masculine or they're feminine in gender, in spelling. All right, so word is masculine. Now that doesn't itself mean that word is a person in John 1. However, the next statement does, where it says in the beginning was the Word, the next statement says, and the Word was with God, which requires presence in God's presence, that is actual presence in God's presence. We've talked about that in our previous module 2A as we went through John. And also it says, and the Word was God, and God is always a personal noun in the Bible. It's never talking about abstract qualities or nature. It always refers to God as a being, as a person, whether it's referring to the Father, whether on rare occasions it refers to the Son, or on other occasions it refers to false gods. It's always referring to some kind of a person who has an actual existence. Even the false gods are demons. They have an actual existence. All right, so those statements make it clear that Word is a person. And so when it says all things were created through him, or all things originated through him, or without him, not one thing originated, him is the correct translation. Not because logos itself requires a person, but because of the other things said about logos in verse 1 require a person. All right. Now, when we get down to verse 10, it's quite clear that logos is Christ in John chapter 1, because it says that he was in the world and the world was made through him, but the world did not know him. So the world was made through him. Through him there is diaotu, the same as in verse 3 where it says all things originated through him. So the connection between verse 3 and verse 10 is clear that it's talking about the same person. And so that identifies the person called Word as being the one, an actual person through whom God created all things. All right. So okay, Oh, I think there's a couple things that I failed to mention. No, I didn't fail to mention that. All right, let's go down to the last one. This is the one that's probably the most popular now among biblical Unitarians. And one of the things I want to point out is, why do they have three completely different interpretations or ways to try to get around these, you know, Christ being the agent of creation passages? Why do they have three different ones that are mutually exclusive? They don't agree with each other. And you'll have different people, you know, presenting different ones to try to get around the problem. None of them successfully get around the problem. All right, none of them do. They're total fails, all three of them. Let's look at this third fail. The creation referenced in John 1 and in Colossians 1 is not the original creation, but it's the new creation that is accomplished through Christ. This is the interpretation that you'll hear from people like Bill Schlegel and several others. Probably the majority of modern biblical Unitarians will use this particular argument. So in the beginning doesn't refer to the beginning of creation. Of course, Anthony Buzzard and would disagree. His interpretation requires that in the beginning is the original creation. Okay, so you've got this big conflict between the different groups. What are the problems with that? So if you look at, let's look at Colossians 1:16 through 20 and see if that idea that all things created through the Son is referring to the new creation as opposed to the original creation. Will that actually work in that passage? Well, Paul says that all things in heaven and on earth, the visible and the invisible, were created, past tense, aorist indicative, which refers to a historical event. Aorist is a tense of a verb in Greek. All right. And in the indicative mood, an aorist indicative verb will refer to a past action that has occurred. All right. Sort of like a snapshot of something that happened in history. So if all things in heaven and earth, visible and invisible, of the new creation were created, past tense, that means everything related to the new creation is already here. It's already created. It's already in existence. Well, what about the new heavens and the new earth? Isn't that part of the new creation? Isn't that the primary part of the new creation? Has that happened yet? No, I'm afraid that hasn't happened yet. You know, people will point to the fact that, well, you know, when Christ died on the cross, he paid the price so that we can have redemption. And so Paul says that we are new creatures in Christ. And so the fact that Christians exist and we are redeemed shows that the new creation is already here. But assuming that to be true, all that shows is that that aspect of the new creation has been accomplished. But this says all things in heaven and earth, visible and invisible, were created. And later in the same verse, it says they have been created, using the perfect participle form of the same verb. All right, perfect participle means something that was completed in the past, but the results continue to the present. So that it's different from the aorist tense in that regard. The aorist doesn't say anything about the present. Just says this happened. The perfect participle says something happened and now we're experiencing the results of that happening. Well, that fits great. Both of these fit great with the original creation, but neither one of them will work with the new creation because nothing of the new creation is actually here other than perhaps we have been converted, but we're not resurrected yet. That part hasn't taken place yet. He goes on to say whether thrones or principalities or powers, everything in heaven and earth. Well, I'm sorry, but the original thrones, human government, principalities, powers, all that stuff is still here. And the new principalities, powers, and thrones and dominions have not been set up yet. If you read Revelation 20, you see that they're set up at the time of the resurrection. Once the first resurrection occurs, then it says, I saw thrones and they sat on them. And authority was given to them at the time of the resurrection, not now. All right, so there's no way that this can be referring to the new creation. But not only that, when Paul says in verse 16 that all things are created through and for the Son, all things in heaven and earth, visible and invisible, all those things have been created, past tense, through the Son. He goes down in verse 20 to say that God is redeeming all things, the same all things he mentioned up here, that is, things in heaven and on earth, using the very same language when he's referring to creation, that all things are being reconciled to God through him, diaotu, the exact same language that we saw in verse 16. So how can, if God created all things through Christ is a reference to the new creation, then why is Christ reconciling the new creation to God? It's not the new creation that's reconciled to God. The new creation is not have separation from God. The old creation is what is separated from God. And it's the old creation, the original creation, that has to be reconciled to God through him. All right? What is already new cannot be reconciled. This is proof, both the past tense verbs and the fact that the same things that are created through the Son are reconciled to God through the Son in this passage, is absolute proof that the new creation interpretation by some biblical Unitarians is completely false. It's just their way of trying to escape what the text actually says, to force their ideas onto the text. Look at John 1, 3, and 10. We have the same thing happening here. All things, we have the same clause that's used by Paul here, all things. All things through him originated, aorist, indicative, a historical event. All this stuff happened in the past. That's what he's saying. Everything happened in the past. So how can John 1, 3 be talking about the new creation? It can't be talking about the new creation. It's talking about the original creation. But here's the other problem. It's got a similar problem that Colossians 1 has, because in verse 10, it says that he was in the world, literally the arrangement. Literally, John 1 verse 10 says the arrangement through him originated. Again, we have the past tense verb referring to historical event, aorist indicative verb, originated. And it is the world or the arrangement through him originated. But the next clause says, and the world or the arrangement did not know him. It's got the same problem we have up here. If the world originating through Christ is a reference to the new creation, then the new creation didn't know him, according to John 1:10. Now, I discussed this verse with Bill Schlegel one time, face-to-face, in verse 10. And he basically tried to make a case from the words cosmos here. Cosmos, which is translated arrangement here. It's usually translated the world. That is the world. He was in the world, and the world was made through him, and the world did not know him. He tried to basically say that the world there is not talking about the created order, because it doesn't use the term, you know, earth or creation or something like that. It uses this term, the system or the arrangement, cosmos. That's what it means, cosmos. It's where we get our English word cosmos from, which refers to the whole universe, but it's not just the physical things in the universe. It's the order of the universe, the fact that all these things are working like a Swiss watch, right? So there's more to it than just physical things. There's how all these things are interacting with each other for this creation to actually run and function. And that's the sense of the word here too. That is, it's not that it's ruling out the physical things. It's that it's talking about the collective whole, right? And we see this, that John, when he makes this statement that he was in the world or the arrangement, and the world originated through him, and the world or arrangement did not know him, it's quoting from Genesis 2:1, which is proof that John is in fact talking about the creation itself, not some ambiguous thing. All right, so they're not going to escape. They're not going to escape that by saying the word cosmos is not talking about the creation, because what does it say in Genesis 2:1? And this is from the Septuagint. And keep in mind that the New Testament writers usually rely on the Septuagint for their quotations and their interpretations. All right, so how does Genesis 2:1 sum up the whole creation after God, you know, said it was good? This is what it says in the Septuagint. And this is word for word translation from the Septuagint. And was completed the heaven and the earth, even all the arrangement. Ha cosmos. Exactly the same as we have in John 1:10, where it says he was in ha cosmos, and ha cosmos did not know him. This is the arrangement. This is the original creation. Genesis 2:1 is using this term, ha cosmos, as a summary statement of the entire completed creation. That's perfectly clear from this passage. And so this ha cosmos, this arrangement, or this world as it's usually translated, originated through him, D'altu, did not know him. Again, if this idea that John 1 is talking about the new creation and not the original creation, then the new creation, the new order, was created through him, and the new creation did not know him. This is a big problem. It's the same problem we really have here in Colossians 1, where we have everything created through him and then him redeeming everything. So you can't redeem what is new. And here, if it's the new creation rejected the one through whom God created it. I would have to say none of these arguments work. None of them work. They're all total fails. They either ignore the grammar or they use illogical arguments. And so all of them are false. The fact that both Paul and John absolutely and clearly place the Son of God at the time of creation as being God's agent in creation is proof that pre-existence is true and that biblical Unitarians' denial of pre-existence is false. It's a false doctrine, and it's a false doctrine that has damaging results, as we're going to see when we look at Philippians chapter 2. All right, well, that's it for today. Hope you enjoyed that. Hope you got something out of it, and we'll see you next time.